You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell, and you've just been listening to Hot Texas by the Hot Texas Swing Band.
They opened tonight's show.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we got a couple things here. First, you know, behind us, what's that, a new logo, Bobby?
We have a brand new logo, Rendezvous with a Writer. We love it.
And we wanted to thank Tom for his interview last week. He had taken care of us when we were out of town at a meeting.
Yeah, we attended the Western Writers of America conference, and there were writers everywhere, to the left, to the right, no matter where you looked. There were writers. And Tom Swearingen, award-winning poet, good friend of ours, hosted a Western writer, very award-winning, Rod Miller, was on last week. And if you missed that show, we would encourage you, just like we did, to go ahead and take a look. And thank you, Tom and Rod, for holding down the fort last week.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And if you have missed any of our shows, you can find them on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Just look for Rendezvous with a Writer. And you can also find audio on Podbean, again, podbean.com, and search Rendezvous with a Writer. Jim, who's our special guest?
Special guest, Mike Trigg.
There he is.
Hi.
Hi, Mike.
We'll be talking to Mike. How are you? We'll be talking to Mike about his book, Burner, with a few comments about his first book, Bit Flip. Mm-hmm.
Is he holding Bit Flip up? You got it there, Mike?
Oh, I do have it here. Yes.
Okay, here we are. Where are you joining us from?
I'm joining you from the San Francisco Bay Area.
All right.
Very good.
So yeah, he's Coachella Valley.
Yeah, on the West Coast, and you and your wife were just featured in a wonderful magazine. Have you got that handy?
I do. It's a little local publication called Mountain Home Magazine. They were nice enough to put us on the cover. It was a great little feature article.
Yeah. And you can find it on Mike's website, and he'll give you that information later. But you will want to go read that after you've spent this time with Mike and with us. So do you have a little something you want to say?
We have a little bio here.
Okay, great.
Well, give a little basic information, and Mike will fill us in along a little bit more. Mike was born in Kentucky and raised in Wisconsin. He earned a BA from Northwestern University and an MBA from University of California, Berkeley. For 25 years, Mike has been an executive, founder, and investor in dozens of technology startup companies. He has been a contributor to TechCrunch, Entrepreneur, and Fast Company, is now a full-time author. Mike's first novel, Bit Flip, was released in August of 2022 to a critical acclaim with 5-star reviews. In his second novel, Burner, Mike offers an incisive critique of temporary culture encapsulated in an edge-of-your-seat psychological thriller. Told with a tech insider's authenticity, the story dives headfirst into the pernicious impacts of technology and social media on our lives.
Oh,
welcome, Mike.
It's a great read.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you both enjoyed it so much.
Oh, it was wonderful. It'll be hard to talk to you without spoiler alert.
You know, I'm familiar with a couple of these magazines, Entrepreneur and Fast mm-hmm. Company. I've read both of them in times gone by. They're a little over my head, though.
They're kind of techie magazines, yeah.
Yes, they are.
The older we get, I don't know. We don't have any young ones running around that can help us with, you know, the remote and all that.
Well, you're live streaming. I think you're doing pretty well.
We have LA Talk Radio to thank for that.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you want to tell us a little something about yourself that maybe wasn't in the bio, Mike?
Sure, yeah. Well, I it's top of mind for me. I guess I'm actually a pretty big soccer fan. I enjoyed playing. Okay. I still play recreationally today. My sons both play soccer. Sadly, I had to watch the U.S. men's national team lose today, which was what happened just before our interview. So I'm still
too bad. That's too bad.
That, but one of these days, U.S. team's gonna break through and play well.
They played. It seems like a few years ago they were playing pretty good.
Yeah, they have definitely have their moments, but they can have letdown moments too, like they did today. So. Mm-hmm.
It seems like you kind of look to the women's team these days because they still have a pretty strong team, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Where we get our soccer fix, for sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your background as a writer. When did you get the desire to write?
I've actually kind of always had the desire to write. I remember getting out my mom's old electric typewriter, which, you know, about dimmed the lights in the entire house when that thing came on. But, you know, I would write little spy novels and things like that when I was a kid. I was really into like Dungeons and Dragons and things like that as a kid and did a lot of writing around that. I took a creative writing class in college and really enjoyed it and considered getting into, you know, being an author and sort of chickened out. I felt at the time that I probably couldn't support myself. I think that probably was true. But I did pursue sort of writing adjacent things. I got into public relations and marketing. I worked on Capitol Hill for a while, you know, wrote speeches and press releases and all that sort of stuff, and really enjoyed all that. And then caught the technology bug. This was in the early 90s. I was really intrigued by what was going on with what we then called the information superhighway. And kind of bet my career on that. I ended up moving out to California to go to business school, wanted to be in the Silicon Valley, and, you know, pursued a 20 plus career doing all types of Silicon Valley startups, you know, big companies, small companies, hardware, software, some successful, some failures, you know, it was kind of the whole gamut. And a lot of those experiences actually are encapsulated in my first book, BitFlip. That was a little bit autobiographical. You know, it was based on some of the experiences I have, as every writer hears, write what you know. And that was the world I knew. And so that was a real fun and sort of cathartic book to write, honestly, because it was a little bit of what I think I would have told my 25-year-old self as I came out to Silicon Valley in, you know, 1996. So.
Yeah, that was kind of that was in the early days. Not too early. Obviously, things were happening, but it was before everything really took over.
Do you want to tell a little bit about your experiences on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, happy to. You know, I think I had a unique experience in Washington. I consider myself politically, you know, fairly moderate. I think probably on social issues, I lean more liberal. On fiscal issues, I probably lean more conservative. And I had a unique experience out there. I'm from Wisconsin originally, as you mentioned in my bio, and I worked for a Republican congressman initially, and then later on worked for a Democratic senator. So I've worked on both sides of the aisle, as they call it in Washington. And, you know, it was a mixed experience. I think I really went there, as many young people do, with the goal of, you know, kind of affecting change. And I witnessed firsthand sort of how hard that is to do and how susceptible our political system is to, you know, lobbying and grassroots efforts, and some of it's legitimate and some of it's very not legitimate. You know, that was a time when big money really started to come into the political process with force, with, you know, some of the Supreme Court rulings to allow PACs and super PACs and basically unrestricted capital to come into our political process. And so that was a very fraught time. You know, I was there in Washington, D.C. when the Oklahoma City bombing happened, when the, you know, the Unabomber stuff was going on, the ricin mailings to Capitol Hill were happening. It just felt like another sort of politically fraught time. And we've kind of been in that political fraught time ever since, really. I think it's just maybe gotten worse and worse. You know, some of the people today are probably watching the first presidential debate, which is happening as we speak. But, you know, we were talking a little bit before the opening about returning, you know, sort of civility and decorum to our political process. I think for me early on that I got kind of disillusioned a little bit, frankly, and it's too bad because I think a lot of people get disillusioned by the political circus out in Washington and leave politics as a result. And, you know, that's kind of what happened to me. I felt like I just don't think I can make the change I hope to make here. And that was kind of the promise of technology. You know, the tech companies picked up the motto of making the world a better place. And I think I felt at the time, and my views on that have changed, but I felt at the time that, you know, this was a place where you could sort of have your cake and eat it too. You could, you know, make the world a better place with this innovative new technology that we were bringing to market. But also, you know, in no small part, what was tempting was the chance to make a lot of money. You know, there's entrepreneurs were, you know, founding companies and selling them for tons of money, or they were going public. And that certainly was a big part of the appeal as well. So.
We read Burner, and that's I'm going to hold it up again. This is your newest book, and congratulations. I think it just released like April 16th of 2024. I'll say the year for those that might be watching this a year from now. and again, absolutely riveting. I felt as a reader, I think we both can agree that as readers, without a tremendous knowledge of what is going on, even on social media platforms, you know, YouTube, we remember when it started and you went there to watch, you know, old videos, you know, and you've really shown us an insider's view, but written for someone like us, kind of the layman that doesn't know. And yet I think tech savvy, social media savvy, web savvy readers will still be riveted by the storytelling that you share. I felt maybe was one of your purposes with this book to open that world to us, to show it to us in ways that maybe we haven't seen it before?
Yes, 100%. You know, my novels, you know, kind of my lane as a writer is commentary on the technology sector's impact on modern life. And they're not, but they're not techno thrillers at all, right? There's no technology expertise or knowledge required. I do try to make it as accessible as possible for any reader. But, you know, the first book looked at a tech company and sort of looked at the inner workings of those companies. It was, and then this second novel, Burner, you're exactly right. I have really been witness to over my career. I spent a number of years at a large social media company and sort of witnessed some of these things happen firsthand. And, you know, believe it or not, I believe that, you know, social media has done many good things. I think it's brought people together in many ways, but it has a very pernicious, you know, unintended consequence. And that is quite simply that for the platforms that make their money off advertising, the more clicks, the more views, the more engaged, the more time you spend on the site, the more money they make. And so they've become very, very, very good at spoon feeding us a dopamine fix that keeps us watching, clicking, and liking. And what, you know, a side effect, as we've sort of witnessed of that, is you can kind of go down the rabbit hole, right? You, instead of getting what you think is an impartial view of information and view of the world and factual events, you're just sort of getting more and more and more of the things that you click on, that you view, that you like. And what happens, obviously, is people can become very polarized, very calcified in their points of view, very unopen to other opinions, other, you know, perspectives. And I think we've really seen that in our political process right now. You know, the country is divided, you know, very, very firmly. There's an, you know, shrinking sector of people who consider themselves, you know, moderates or, you know, independents or whatever you want to call that middle part of the spectrum. And I don't think that's good. I don't think it's good for democracy. I don't think it's good for governance. I don't think it's good for us as citizens. And I hope the book helps open people's eyes to, you know, how easily that can happen, right? Where you can sort of go down this path in some of these online communities, dark web forums, et cetera. And pretty soon you are the extremist, right? You are the one storming the gates or, you know, committing the riot or, you know, doing the violent or criminal act. And that's very scary.
Mm-hmm. It's almost it's like a sweet feed. It's like you do go back. Yeah. You're it's an addiction, I think. And you have a character, Chloe, and we're jumping ahead a little bit, but Chloe, she has so many followers. You have a section Chloe talks about kind of like her day. You know, she's so tied to, yeah, by such and such a time, I have to have done my first, you know, post. And I think, oh my gosh, I don't want to be tied to it like, yeah, that. How does she have much of a life? And yet she does. And she also, yeah, doesn't really question it. It's like, this is my life. This is what I do.
You know? Well, that's true. But how are we as people that we follow this stuff so religiously?
Yeah, why do we?
Yeah. Why would we? Some of the stuff that we're watching is so nonsense. What? You know, some of it's important, but a lot of it is, can we do something else?
I'll give you the perspective of somebody who's been on the other side, right? These platforms are engineered deliberately to be addictive. Make no mistake about that. And the reason they are is they can see the analytics. The people who engineer the site and design the site, they can see the analytics and they can see what you click on. They can see what you watch. They can segment you by groups. And so their job is to get you to engage more, spend more time on the site, click on more stuff, et cetera. And so that is the answer, right? There's fundamental human behavior around validation and you know, ego and esteem and you know, social connections and all these things that have been, you know, exploited by these platforms. And you know, we've seen very public examples, you know, of Facebook and other platforms knowing full well the detrimental effects that their technologies can have on mental health and self-esteem and those sorts of things. And yet they charge right on. And so, you know, I think that there's all my books are cautionary tales at some level. And you certainly see in the two protagonists, Shane and Chloe, and I can talk more about them and the story a little bit in a second here, but they're certainly meant to be cautionary tales, flawed protagonists.
Mm-hmm. You want to ask when?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's easy to see how, as you would say, we might be led down the rabbit hole. We had talked on Tuesday that you got a little inspiration for this book from what happened on January the 6th.
Yeah. That was a moment, I think, for all of us where just sort of said, what's happening here? You know, it's kind of the recognition that, you know, I don't believe the majority of the people who participated in that had that intention, had that, you know, went there with ill purpose. But they were also at the same time sort of driven to that kind of extreme of behavior with the news and information that they'd been fed, right? And so I had a moment where I just thought, okay, that's, you know, it's terrifying, but it's also interesting to me, right? That mm-hmm. we're in an age where people can be, you know, and there are examples of it all around. The Pizzagate, you know, the guy who showed up with a gun because he was convinced that there was, you know, a pedophile ring operating out of the basement of the pizza place. I mean, that's dangerous, right? And if people are inspired to violent acts because of misinformation or, as we've increasingly seen, outright disinformation, sometimes by foreign adversaries trying to stir the pot and disrupt American democracy and challenge our trust in each other and our institutions and other things, that is scary. So yes, that was a little bit of the inspiration for the book. And there's a date in the book, October 12th, where things go awry. So just to set it up a little bit more, the book opens with Shane Stoller, the male protagonist, has just been arrested and accused of domestic terrorism for being the mastermind behind this movement called the Burnouts Movement. And he does it all under the anonymous handle Burner 911. So they don't know that it's him, but the government believes it's him. And then it alternates between Chloe, who's the other first person narrator. Actually, there's a third too, Wayne. Mm-hmm. But Chloe, in her opening scene, is abducted by the Burnouts, the followers of this Burner 911 account. Nobody knows who Shane is or that Shane and Chloe are in love. And so I sort of thought, like, what's the most extreme thing that someone could do? And, you know, here Shane ends up jeopardizing the woman he loves by his own ego, his own, desire to lead this movement.
Yeah. You mentioned the storyline starts, as you said, October 12th, 2023. And we're in present time, and then we go back in time, and then we're in present time. How is that for you as an author? Did you write it that way, or did you write all the backstories and then figured out where you were going to insert? What was your process on jumping around with this?
Well, I will say it's extremely hard, to write non-chronologically. I did do it, in my brain it had a logical sequence, right? So I started with the opening the opening paragraph is what my first draft was. I always had this vision of, Shane almost writing a letter from jail, right? And so I wanted to, though, reveal, his backstory and Chloe's backstory. And so what the book, it was a little challenging as a writer because there are these two first person narratives, Shane and Chloe. Then Shane's lawyer is another first person narrator. His name is Wayne, and Wayne's a total character in his own right. And then there's all these other sort of found objects, as we sometimes call them in the writing world, of court transcripts and text messages and media articles and little bits and pieces that fill in the story that come along the way that are told by none of the three narrators and sometimes contradict what some of the three narrators tell you. They're all unreliable in different ways. And so it was really a lot of fun to write. It was very challenging to write, but I was really proud of how it came together.
Well, we enjoyed the fact that you told a lot of the story through court transcript.
It was fascinating.
And obviously you got a little research in there because you interviewed people who are telling the stories or, attorneys or their prosecutors or their FBI people who are making
witnesses.
Yeah.
They're expert witnesses on his state of mind and so forth.
So you know some FBI people that...
I do. This was, very different from my first book. So my first book, I mentioned Write What You Know. A lot of the experiences were sort of borrowed from my time in the tech industry. So no research required. I sort of knew the character types. I knew the place, et cetera. Burner required a lot of research because this was a field, that I didn't know as much about. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, I think, I mentioned to you, I mentioned the Oklahoma City bombing. I looked at the Oklahoma City bombing court transcripts, right, as inspiration because I thought, that's probably one of the bigger acts of domestic terrorism that's ever, tragically happened in the United States. So that was an input, a lot of research in that. Had lawyers consult with me, had three different FBI, retired FBI agents advise me on, how would an FBI investigate a crime like this? What sorts of evidence would they try to gather? What would be their methods and techniques? Talked with another fellow author, and he's become a good friend, was a former prison warden. So he was really helpful for all the scenes that take place while Shane's in prison to sort of make sure that those are as accurate as possible. A friend of mine is a reporter at WABC News in New York. So she was very helpful on all the media and TV reporting and making sure that voice was accurate. So it took a lot of time and research to try and make all those different pieces as they come together, each being their own voice and tone, but also be, you know, as authentic as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to go to a very short break because we want our listening audience to know one of the places that they can get both of your books. And then when we come back, I think, Mike, you're going to read something aloud.
That would be great.
Perfect. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Here's a word from Out West Shops, bookshop.org affiliate page. Take a listen.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest Mike Trigg. We're talking about his great book, Burner. We have a couple questions, but we set it up. Mike's got some to read here out of the book.
Yeah, so why don't we start with that, Mike?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do a reading. This is actually, these are literally the first words I wrote for this book. And they also happen to be the first words of the book. That's not always the case for every author. But this is reading from chapter one, first page. October 12th, 2023. I'm not sure yet if this is a memoir or a manifesto, a love letter or a suicide note. Maybe it's just my version of events to explain how I got here. Maybe it's something more. I'm not sure there's really much difference anyway. A memoir requires a story to tell, and I have plenty of those. A manifesto requires an audience, and mine is unreachable right now. A love letter requires a recipient. But I don't know if she will even talk to me ever again. Mm-hmm. A suicide note is the easiest, lazy even. But for that, you need conviction, or you look like a dumb ass. Excuse me. They don't have me on watch yet, so I still have options. Maybe I could get shoelaces, but those have never seemed strong enough. Pills would be better, cleaner. Anyway, I'll find out eventually. It'll reveal itself as I write more. I definitely have a lot to say. Today was a big day. It exceeded my wildest dreams, but I knew they would come for me. I was prepared, sort of. Actually, I'm not sure I was prepared at all.
That's a great passage. That's a great passage.
That's Mike Trigg, the author and our featured guest tonight, and you just got to hear the opening few passages from the first pages of Burner. And we really highly recommend this book. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about it. You want to go ahead with your next question?
You know, it's Burner. What is a burner? What is a burner phone?
And yeah, it actually has three meanings, the term burner, in this story. Yes, the burner phone. And as you pointed out, you know, there's a cracked phone on the cover of the screen, you know, speaks to technology independence. A burner phone ends up being the way that Shane and Chloe eventually are able to communicate with each other. So phones and technology certainly have a big role to play in the book. Burner 911 is also the, you know, online profile name of this anonymous leader of this movement that becomes coined as the Burnouts. And so there's a, you know, that refers to that as well. And then, it also refers to, and this is sort of the, maybe the most abstract meaning of the term, but it refers to a mentality. And there's a sequence, I won't be able to find it right at the tip of my tongue here, but where, you know, it's sort of like burn it all down. And it's a very cynical, I think, point of view that is embraced by too large a portion of our population, which is, you know, throw it all out. Everything's broken, you know, burn it all down, you know, kind of this dismissive, disruptive, destructive view of society right now. And I think that's really pernicious. I think I wish more people would, you know, look at what they want to change, look at what they think is broken, and, you know, look for ways that they can make a difference in their own personal actions and lives, rather than, you know, this kind of self-destructive, you know, negative mm-hmm. point of view.
You know, you read that passage, it's obviously Shane's thoughts. You know, thought one of the big things about Shane, his thinking is that he says, we have kind of a division, the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
He's very upset with folks he calls the billionaires. And I think he's like thinking there's no hope here for the common man, so to speak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like that plan A, how's that working for you? And if it's not,
let's go to plan B.
Tell us a little bit about plan B.
Plan B. Yeah. I mean, that is presented in the book as B for burnouts. You know, it's Shane's kind of rallying cry, right? So you sort of see this lead up as that gets him arrested in the opening scene. You see this lead up kind of build where he's getting more and more provocative, more and more, you know, aggressive. What empowers Shane and his followers is a number of, you know, frankly, sort of scams, right, that make them money, everything from stock squeezes to cryptocurrency to, you know, he just has sort of he's sort of this idiot savant where he has this incredible ability to, you know, an incredible IQ to understand these things and manipulate them to his benefit. But then also he grows more, you know, he grows a bigger and bigger following as people are like, hey, I can make money kind of doing this as well. And so, you know, plan B becomes their sort of rallying cry. And what you discover as you read the book is Shane's also motivated by a degree of revenge. He feels betrayed by... Mm-hmm. Chloe's father, who's a tech billionaire, you know, he's trying to sort of exact revenge against Ken Corbin is his name, his company, and organizes this riot on the streets of San Francisco, but it spirals out of his control, right? I mean, this is the ultimate unintended consequences. And when Shane discovers, he doesn't know this in the opening passage that I just read, when he discovers that Shane's been abducted by his followers, you know, who've taken his platform to this extreme he kind of never imagined, his regret and remorse sort of collapses in on him, right? And he realizes mm-hmm. at the point, you know, that he's cost himself the thing that was most important to him, which is, you know, his relationship with Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story of Chloe? What's she all about?
Tell us about Chloe.
Yeah, so, you know, both characters to some degree are, you know, maybe I'd call them sort of archetypes of modern right and left, right? The Shane kind of has this very populist rhetoric, kind of this alt-right, red pilling you sometimes hear it described as, that he's gone through very justifiably. You know, he's had a very challenging upbringing. He loses his parents, he loses his foster parents, he loses a mentor to him. And, you know, he rightfully so has bitterness and anger toward the world, really. That's what kind of inspires him down this path. But he realizes as he goes that his enemy isn't sort of who he thought it was, right? He realizes that really, you know, what has been the sort of the core injustice in his life is wealth inequality. And so that's sort of Shane's backstory. Chloe is a philanthropist. She's the daughter, you know, the heiress of a billionaire's fortune, has very high, you know, is an Instagram celebrity in her own right, and does, you know, great work bringing attention to, you know, philanthropic causes, runs her father's philanthropic organization, but, you know, kind of is in it for her own egotistical reasons as well, right? Realizes that she has an addiction to social media, that when she's abducted and can no longer be on it, you know, kind of strikes her in the face. And so she also has this sort of awakening to the fact that she's lived a life of privilege and that, and perhaps entitlement, and that real people are having a hard time, you know, and that it's more than just a cute Instagram shot. It's doing real, they're trying to affect real change in the world. And so Chloe kind of goes on her own spiritual journey, if you will, to recognize, and in fact, that's the what germinates her relationship with Shane, is this increasing realization that they kind of share many of the same values, even though they kind of come from traditionally opposite camps. They identify and come to work on this sort of common ground that they have, and so it's a really interesting course that their relationship goes through.
Well, and Chloe, who is so accustomed to the best of wardrobe and, you know, that high lifestyle, is suddenly, when she's abducted, she is taken into a whole different world.
Right.
I mean, she has these aren't really spoiler alerts. She's a captive. She's been right. kidnapped. And so she's got a hood over her face, and she's strapped to a chair, and, you know, her whole life is just turned totally upside down.
Yep.
But she's very resourceful. She's very intelligent, and she's resilient.
Yeah. And she listens. She can't see anything, you know, but you've crafted her. You've written her. So well that we can feel, because it is in first person, and there's that scene where she's in the she finally gets to the bathroom, and she describes the bathroom to us, and I could hardly it's like I don't want to read, well, I gotta read that page.
she's
resilient. You've crafted a really really like, you know, and I really like Shane. He's scary, though. He's so scary because he's so naive, he's so powerful. But he's so naive. He looks back and goes, I didn't know they would do that, you know?
Yeah.
And I like these characters.
Well, I talked a little bit about, you know, in the opening, we talked about how social media platforms kind of exploit our, you know, natural human instincts to gain clicks and gain likes and gain, you know, viewing time. There is a generation of people, we call them influencers, right, who are very good at that, right? They know what to post, what to say to get the biggest reaction, to get the most followers. I think many of them almost don't even, you know, have lost sight of maybe why they're doing what they're doing in the first place, right? They're just sort of so addicted to the dopamine hit of, oh, I got more followers, I got more likes, and they'll sort of feed that beast. They'll feed what they think their audience wants. And both Shane and Chloe are kind of trapped in that vicious cycle, right? They're mm-hmm. very good at stirring up their followers and getting more followers, but they're not true to themselves, right? They've lost kind of their mission, their purpose, their greater calling. And it doesn't really occur to either of them until this crisis of October 12th, where one's arrested, the other's abducted, and it forces them to kind of revisit their life choices, if you will.
Well, when we spend time with Chloe, I couldn't help but wonder a little bit about Patty Hearst. And again, we want you to go read the book, so we don't want to say a whole lot. But
I want to read the book, by the way.
I wondered if Patty Hearst came to mind as you were crafting Chloe's situation.
She did, as did her, I think it's her niece, Amanda Hearst, who is an Instagram celebrity, right?
She's kind of this bill. I didn't know that.
We didn't know that.
So, you know, I obviously, you know, for people who don't know the story of Patty Hearst, you know, you can go look it up on Wikipedia, but it's a fascinating psychology, right? A captor becomes, you know, indoctrinated, if you will. And she kind of goes on that journey. But she's already kind of, what we discover is she's kind of already inched her way down that path, right? She has a relationship with Shane. She comes to realize that he's likely the person behind this account that she finds reprehensible in many ways, right? And so, you know, there's this kind of, and then she is trying to, you know, kind of influence Shane's point of view. She actually ends up being the one to kind of broker this scheme between her father and Shane. And I won't give away much more than that, but she's kind of got her fingerprints on the gun as well, if you will, right? And in terms of her involvement prior to even the moment where she's abducted. And so there's the other thing that's really, I think, fascinating, and again, was really fun to write, is that, you know, Shane and Chloe, when they hit their respective crisis moments in the opening two chapters, know something that nobody else knows, right? Like nobody knows who burner 911 is. Nobody knows that they are dating each other, right? And so as that information starts to leak out, people, you know, react to them differently, right? Mm-hmm. Treat them differently. So there's this whole secondary dynamic going on about kind of how we treat people, how we think about people, how we react to what they say and do, that changes as the general public starts to understand what's really going on in this case.
So, Mike, the big question is, could this happen?
You know, many of the things in this depicted in this book already have happened. I think when I wrote it, I thought, oh, this will all be, you know, maybe this is only a moment in time, and it seems like it's only gotten worse. So, you know, there are a number of things. Many of the people who've written reviews on the book have used a phrase somewhere along the lines of ripped from the headlines, right? I mean, a lot of this stuff, and, you know, you hear the old cliche that, you know, reality is stranger than fiction sometimes. And so there are a lot of things in this. There's a plot point around a short squeeze, and people may remember GameStop, the company GameStop was, you know, a victim of a short squeeze where, you know, this populist group of buyers, you know, rallying the stock up on, you know, Reddit and other forums, cost, you know, a billionaire hedge fund manager, you know, a ton of money. And you know, so I, that was sort of an inspiration for a plot point in the book. You know, a lot of the things I mentioned, January 6th being an inspiration for a plot point in the book. So, you know, a lot of the stuff, you know, I write contemporary fiction, and I am trying to offer a commentary and a cultural critique of the things that we're all experiencing right now. And so I think looking at real world incidents and seeing how they affect our thinking and affect our lives is a really important part of the research as well.
You know, it is kind of scary, as you kind of suggested, you know, can this happen? You're sitting there with a cell phone, you know, you're thinking the possibilities. I could control the world right here.
Right.
You and I couldn't.
There's a great line where Chloe says, you know, there's some reference to a gun, and she says, I can do just as much damage with a phone, you know. There's mm-hmm. and there's, you know, there's power to be wielded in that device.
Yeah. Mike, we're so delighted you're with us tonight. Do you remember how we kind of got connected?
Yeah, I think I was working with a publicist during the launch to support the launch of this book, which is, she's been great. They've been great, you know, getting me media. And so that was, I think, the original connection.
I think so too. So if you're listening or watching and you're a publicist, a literary agent, a publisher, maybe you're an author and you'd love to come on the show, just go ahead and reach out to me at Bobby with an I, BobbyJeanBell@gmail.com. And we'll begin a little bit of dialogue. Yeah. We'd also like to just take a moment and thank Blue Cottage Agency, who have been doing a lot of marketing on our behalf, and they support authors big time. So here's just a quick word, and we thank them from Blue Cottage Agency, and we'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with special guest Mike Trigg, and we're talking about his great book, Burner. You know, we had a couple of character questions, Mike. Is it ever tough to kill off a character?
Well, don't give a spoiler alert, Jim.
You won't say how many.
People may or may not die in this book or the first book. It is, you know, character development, I think a lot of authors find that to be the most sort of rewarding and fulfilling and interesting part of writing a novel. You know, you start out with an idea, obviously, for a character, and you do all your work to define them and write down their description and their values and beliefs and behaviors and everything. But then they do just sort of take on a life of their own.
Yes, they do.
You start to get a little bit of image. They develop weirdly kind of a sense of independence from you as an author. You can have moments where you're like, no, that character would never do that. You can have the opposite where the character is like, I absolutely will do this and you can't tell me otherwise. So, you feel like you develop a rapport and a relationship with them. You know, I'm definitely a big fan. This reflects my personal philosophy on life to some degree of flawed protagonists. You know, I don't believe everybody is either all good or all bad. And so with all my characters, I try to, you know, have their goals, wants, needs very clear, but also, you know, have them willing to, you know, bend the rules or do unethical things sometimes to get those, you know, wants and needs fulfilled. And I think that makes for interesting characters. It makes for interesting discussion. It's thought provoking afterwards, you know, kind of the, like, would you do this? Would you, know, how far would you go in a similar situation? And so, but to get to your point about killing characters off, you know, it is always, you know, I write thrillers, so people have to die in thrillers. Otherwise, you're betraying the genre. And so, you know, I do have a little bit of remorse sometimes. Yeah. I think, you know, you always, as a writer, those are going to be the most gripping moments for people. And you want to, you know, you need to be really thoughtful about how you set them up. You need to kind of give that character the respect that they deserve for being a plot point in your novel. So.
And then that's when we're sitting reading side by side, and I say, "Oh no!" And he says, "Don't tell me! Don't tell me! I'm not there yet." I have a question because you are also a reader. I'm assuming that you do read books within the genre that you write, and maybe you read other books as well. But if you are reading in the genre that you write, are you able to just be a reader, or are you trying to figure it all out, or say, oh no, I know all about that tech piece, they got that wrong, or, you know, can you just be a reader, or are you always
I can absolutely just be a reader, and I enjoy it. It's weird, I actually wish my brain would do a better job of deconstructing and drawing inspiration and saying, oh, it's really interesting how they structured this thing, or, you know, developed this character or whatever it might be. I think it's good to read that way though. Right. I mean, the job of a book at the end of the day is to entertain. Mm-hmm. I find it super, super helpful. You know, when I'm working on a story and I've got a third novel in the works, to have these early, I call them beta readers, you know, from my time in the tech industry, we had beta users. Now I think of beta readers, and, you know, that's what I want from them. I don't want structure or story arc or plot points. I want them to tell me, what did you like? What did you not like? You know, just react to it emotionally as a piece of entertainment, because when you're so close to it and in the script, you know, day to day, it can become very hard. You know, you kind of lose sight of that. Everything seems important to you when you're the author. But the reader is more discerning. You know, the reader is going to know what they like and don't.
I'm looking at time. Oh, my goodness. So we've been talking to our special guest, Mike Trigg, Burner. Mike, how can people find you, follow you?
It's very easy. My author website is MikeTrigg.com, MikeTrigg.com. And, you know, you can find everything about me there, links to my books, links to my articles that I've written, you name it, you know, reviews, et cetera. So all the media coverage that I've gotten. So that's the one-stop shop, if you will, for all things in my author career.
Jim has a couple quotes. I think you have time to read really quick, fast.
Yeah, this is from Shane, our main character in the book. Yeah, his thoughts, the myth of the American dream. Truth is, we can't all be what we want to be. Everyone can't have everything. Our dreams are more and more unattainable, while our means are more and more unavailable. What they should be telling CBU students is the world needs more long-haul petrochemical truckers, too. And this is one from, this quote is from one you put in one of your, heading one of your chapters from the French philosopher and writer Voltaire. Those that can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. And one well I thought was kind of interesting by a guy by the name of Martin Cooper, developer of the cell phone, and the first person to make a wireless call in 1973. The best way to get people to think outside the box is not to create the box in the first place.
So, Mike, this has been wonderful having you with us. And we look forward to your next book. Yeah. You must let us know when it's ready. Our guest next week is Helen F. Wand, and we'll be interviewing her about her book, Echoes of Forgotten Places, an award-winning title. Yeah. And we thank everybody for being with us tonight. And do you have a closing thought?
Well, what we always, thanks, Mike, but what we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing and we'll keep reading. We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks Mike. So much.